Welcome to today's Young & Associates, Inc. conference call titled Regulatory Update Third Quarter 2017. During the presentation, all lines will be in a listen-only mode. Any questions can be directed to the presenter after the presentation. Thank you for your attention. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Mr. Bill Elliott.
Well, thank you, and good morning to you. It's good afternoon for me. I have to try to get the office to understand the difference between morning and afternoon and lunchtime and that kind of stuff. Sorry about that, those of you that should be at lunch, but we got a lot of ground to cover today. We're going to be taking a look at several things during the course of our presentation here. The general reg update will be pretty short, but as you well know, they screwed Truett up pretty good, and so they sent out 70 pages of correction, and so you should have a nice, big, thick manual. And we're going to take a look at those issues as well. When we are done, you can call me at the 800 number if you have any questions at all. I will be around for the rest of the day, and I can certainly help you with anything that comes up during the presentation. So at any rate, here we go. Page one. Amendments to Regs X and Z. This is mortgage rules, and really, this is miscellaneous nonsense. Really not much there to spend any time on. It's just really kind of an FYI. You want to read about it on page one, have a good time. Secondly, Reg E and prepaid accounts. Prepaid accounts here that affect E and Z. Really, we've discussed this in earlier sessions. That was as far as the changes for prepaid cards and that kind of stuff. However, they have delayed that for 6 months, and so we'll just kind of wait on that. It will happen next year sometime. If you're not selling cards or issuing cards, prepaid kind of cards, you don't care anyway. With that, by the way, there is a small entity compliance guide, and I put that out there. You'll see it on page two, only to make a comment, really. The small entity compliance guides, whenever someone emails me a question and quotes the guide at me, I always kind of cringe because the guides are not great. What they do is they try and take something that they've made very intricate and knock it down into 100 pages, and when you do that, you leave out important details. So be really careful about using them. It is out there if you want to get the one for Reg E and Reg Z with these prepaid cards, but not really maybe worth your time. So you do what you want with that. Rules that are under development. The prepaid rule I just finished talking about, they think they might have screwed that up. They've already delayed everything until next year, and now they're going to continue to work on it. Surprise, surprise, surprise. That's kind of the way it goes with them lately, and there's not a whole lot we can do about it. Just hope that someday they'll get it right, I guess. So at any rate, you can read about that a little bit if you're so inclined. Amendments to Reg B. I'm going to see you folks, at least some of you here, in a few weeks, and we're going to talk about the Reg B changes extensively. It will be later today. That would be for a live one. At any rate, we will be talking about that, and what we're going to do with Reg B is we're going to pretend that everything they said they were going to do, they actually are going to do, because I believe that's the way it will come down. And so what we're going to do is pretend that all the changes are final, even if they're not, whenever we get there to talk to you about this. That's the best we can do right now. They've put themselves in this gigantic hole and are working their way out way too slowly. Also, technical corrections and clarifying amendments to HMDA. Most of the folks listening here today are not HMDA banks, I know. But there were changes, and they did get those out. That actually has finally become final. And I know I'm doing HMDA, at least in North Dakota. right before the CBC, and all those changes will be talked about there. Most of you don't care about that one at all. Here's a perfect example of what I mean about compliance guides. If you take a look on page 3, you'll see that there's a small entity compliance guide that came out about Reg E, and this is the remittance transfer rule. The remittance transfer rule is the rule about limiting your foreign wires and keeping that amount low so you don't have to comply with the rule. If you remember that one, we don't talk about it much because most community banks have found a way not to get involved with it. In any event, that rule came out. It has not changed from the very first time it came out. And if you look there, they're on version 4 of the small entity compliance guides. That gives you a hint about how those things go. But you know what? If you need the information, it is there. Have a great time. Going on to page 4. A lot of the supervisory highlight stuff are not all that exciting. And not all that useful. However, we believe this one is. You'll see the URL for it there on page 4. And this is about credit reporting. Aimed more at the credit bureaus than you, but it is will have some impact on you. And so we recommend you go out and give that one a read. Other things they posted, requests for information about consumer credit cards. That is required by law every so often. No real big deal there. Requests for information about the 2013 RESPA servicing rule. We hope they do something with that. They probably won't. Requests for information regarding small business lending. That particular one, by the way, is a request for information as they get ready to implement the Dodd-Frank required HMDA for commercial loans. There's a lot of screaming going on about that. A lot of people don't want to do it because it's such a pain in the neck, and I understand all that. But I think to get out of it legitimately is going to take an act of Congress. They cannot agree that today is Friday. So exactly how they're going to do something about this, I have no clue. But Congress mandated that we do this. I'm not sure how the Bureau can say, well, they said that, but we're not going to bother. CFPB is in a mess. It is catching up with FEMA as the worst federal agencies, and as you know, FEMA has their hands full with Texas and soon to be Florida. So I don't know what's going to happen with all that. Nothing really much has changed for the CFPB. Richard Cordray still does not have the job legally. And the word on the street here in Ohio is that he's going to leave the CFPB and come back to Ohio and run for governor. He used to be our attorney general. And quite frankly, as a banker, I would be happy to see that. As a resident of Ohio, I'm not all that excited about him coming back here. So we'll just see how all that works out over time. At any rate, there's a lot of battling going on. The problem is there is a law. It's not something that the CFPB dreamed up. Last one on page 5 is a request for information regarding the ability to repay qualified mortgage rule. There actually is a bill that makes sense that is in Congress right now, working its way through, and it might happen. And quite frankly, that rule says if you're willing to keep the loan on your books, it's a qualified mortgage, case closed. And for a lot of you that do a lot of in-house, on-your-books kind of lending, that would make your life a lot easier if they did that. And, of course, it's common sense because you're not going to put something on your books that is junk. You're just not going to do that. So we'll wait and see how all that comes out. In the meantime, we continue on. Other agencies. FFIEC, it's actually the distressed and underserved, not rural underserved. I should change that slide someday. At any rate, if you keep your hands where they are right now, and you go out to the very back of this manual, you should see the distressed and underserved for your state. I'm hoping it's there. If it's not and you want it, please let me know. But they that is part of CRA. So if you want to take a look at that list, feel free. If you need help with it in any way, shape, or form, let me know. But it's in the very back of this manual. Federal Reserve Board finally got something done. They made final amendments to Reg CC. As you know, we've been talking about those, getting around to doing Reg CC because we've expected the rule to be finalized now for quite a while. It has not, and it really still hasn't. The part that they got done is really going to affect bookkeeping, that it won't have any measurable impacts on your customers directly. All the rules about holds and all that, none of that is changing. Here's what we're going to do. This is something that we are going to cover live in the fourth quarter session. We have Montana and North Dakota on this call. Montana will be the afternoon of your day, will be covered, and it will be pretty much the end of the day. We'll get to Reg CC. For those of you in North Dakota, it will be one of the second day topics. So what will happen is morning Montana and third quarter session for North Dakota, we'll be doing Reg B and talking about the new application for next year and all that fun stuff. There will be plenty of excitement there. I'm sorry, it's not North Dakota, it's Kansas. I'm sorry, I left you out, Kansas. Sorry about that. Been one of those days. So for both of you are twice a year. So the morning will be devoted to Reg B and the new application. The afternoon will be devoted to the new fifth pillar of BSA, which is CDD, at great length. And with that goes, in the afternoon then, we are going to be doing Reg CC at the end of the day, but don't bring your bookkeeping department to listen to that. That is not going to work out at all. They're going to be bored all day long till the last hour, and that just isn't going to be all that effective, I don't think. You make that decision, not me, of course. And the majority of the afternoon will be on the CDD rules. So morning Reg B, afternoon CDD, and Reg CC. So we will be talking about all these amendments as part of that. Also, there's a 314A fact sheet. It starts about on page 7. On top of page 8, you see the address for it. Whoever does 314A, that's that every other week list that comes out, you have to check. Whoever's doing that ought to give it a read. The rest of the bank doesn't care. So, okay. So there's really not a gigantic amount going on right now. It's been pretty quiet. As I said, Cordray's in a tough spot because he doesn't have the job legally and there are things he needs to get done. And I went to a session not too long ago where the CFPB was there and were asked some pretty pointed questions for which they had no answers. So what it really comes down to is they're in a mess. They've been in a mess. They're going to keep being in a mess until something happens positively over here with this whole thing. There is a law pending right now to dissolve them and change everything again. That, of course, doesn't make anyone comfortable who's working there if they have a brain in their head. There's lots of battling going on about what's going to happen. And as you know, Washington is a mess right now. They can't seem to agree on much anything. So we're just going to have to sit back and wait and maybe be thankful that things are kind of quiet right now. Just really a few things going. And pretty much that's enough. So we'll just see what happens with all that. I wish I had a good answer about when things were going to happen. But we still have no idea on so much of it. And we asked some pretty pointed questions of the CFPB, and we got blarney and nonsense answers. And I think that's probably about the way it is. So I wish it was different. I wish they were more organized and had it together and really thought things through, but they don't seem to quite be able to pull that off. So we'll do the best we can in the meantime. And we need to talk about TRID. Now, going forward, so you know what we're going to happen, what's going to happen next year, is remember Reg B and CDD and part of Reg CC is going to be this fall session. In the spring, the first one, the morning session, will be Regulation E as in Edward, because there are changes coming with that. Not monstrous changes, just odds and ends, really. But we haven't done Reg E in for like forever in the CBC, so we're going to do that. That'll be the morning. The afternoon will be a review of TRID, including all the new stuff. This new stuff is not effective until October of next year, so there's no gigantic rush on this. There are some things in here we do want to bring up, things that might be useful to you. But really, none of it is required till next October. So there's plenty of time on this, and the fact that we're not going to get to it till March or April next year is not a problem. The changes are fairly mild, frankly, and the time period gives you plenty of time. Frankly, they have to give a lot of time because they have to give time for your programmers to work it out, because it'll be much more a programming problem in many respects than it will be for the bank. As they try and clean up the programs, because they had to guess the first time. Now we have rules on some of this. They'll be able to do a better job. Now, this came out in July. Some are going to be talked about a lot. Some we're just going to say it's there. Some, again, are for you. Some is for your programmers. Detail we'll work into next year. But let's take a look at it. The summary is on page 10 here, and it's a quick look at everything here, frankly. Effective date is next October, and the rule seems pretty innocuous. If you start reading the summary of the final rule, there's not a whole lot there. But if you start with the last two bullet points on page 10 and all of page 11, you'll see that they must messed around with a whole lot of different sections of the reg. It's not just a couple little things. None of them are major. Some of them make common sense, frankly, and we're glad that happened. But you know, it's still kind of messed up, to be perfectly honest about it. And a lot of the times, someone will ask, and the best we can do is say, call your regulator and see how you're going to be examined on that, because it doesn't make. There's no hard and fast rule about anything, it seems like. And so we have to muddle through the best we can on this. But there are four major subjects that you will see there on page 10. Tolerance for total payments, and that really will help us out. That's a good thing. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Partial exemption for groups that are not you, so you don't care. Also, for cooperative units, most of you probably not doing any loans on timeshares, so you don't much care about that one. And some guidance on sharing disclosures with the various parties involved. At any rate, on page 10, going into page 11, there's a lot of detail. I hope you go back and take a look at that later. Now, in this manual, you will see spots where I have, like, new regulatory text 1.1. It is section 1 of the reg, the first change. You'll see that on page 12. There's no regulatory thing there. That's just to kind of help us out as we talk through today so you know where I am in the manual. No regulatory purpose beyond that. This first section, authority, purpose, and scope, and all that, you don't care about any of that. There's no news there to talk about, and we're not going to spend much time on it. In the commentary, the only thing we really want to look at is on page 14. Towards the bottom of the page, they say that this is going to be effective October 1 of next year. That's mandatory compliance. It will be effective 60 days after publication. I'm not sure it's been published yet. In any event, it's not a problem because you're not going to deal with most of it until next October anyway. Section 2.1, which you're going to find on page 14 here, is an important one. This has really nothing to do with TRID, but it's a good thing they did it. It's been this way for a while in other parts of the rule, and they're just really trying to catch up a little bit here. And this revolves around trusts, and specifically it revolves around the family trust as our issue here. I don't know what happens in your states, but in a lot of states, they'll have like the Bill and Meredith Elliott Family Trust, with Bill and Meredith as the trustees. And really all they've done is to put the home in a trust, but they're still living there, it's still their home, it's still everything. Nothing's really changed until they die and it helps with the state issues or whatever might happen there. That's fine and dandy. What they've done here is, by the way they've defined trust now, is if you have a situation where mom and dad have to or have put their home in a trust for tax or estate purposes, whatever, and then they want a loan on it, really what they're saying across the board here is that you ignore the trust for purposes of deciding whether there's a rescindable situation. So if me and my wife get a loan, the property's in a trust, we're living in the house, it's our home. We have a right to rescind. You ignore the trust, and that is really all what it's all about here. And you can see the language for that on the screen, and also on page 15 in your manual. Under accept transactions, that's not likely to apply to you because you have to do things like give them 0% interest for forever. And so it is there in the interest of full disclosure, but we're not going to waste any more time talking about it. Time to move on. We move on to page 18 now. And there is some good information here and things we need to think about. 17 starts to get into the disclosures we do and the estimates we use, etc. And here's where it can get a little bit exciting, so pay attention. There are a couple of different ways to do a construction loan. One is you do a construction loan. It has a maturity date. Then you write a new note and mortgage to do the end financing. That's perfectly okay, perfectly legal. But it does mean hauling the customer in again to sign papers. The second one is to do a construction perm, where you do it all as one loan. And when you do that, you really have a choice. You can do it as one loan completely with one disclosure and be done with it. Or you can have a disclosure for the construction period and another disclosure for the permanent period. Now, the reality is if you do two disclosures or if you do two separate loans, you're probably better off if you can manage it. The problem is a lot of your softwares cannot do one note and two disclosures. They just can't. Hopefully someday, but right now they can't do it. So let's talk through this a minute. If I was running your bank, I admit it's tougher on you and the customers. But if I was running your bank, one of the things I would do is say we're going to do a construction loan. When that's over, we'll rewrite it for almost free for the customer for the end financing. Now, there's a couple really good reasons for doing that. Number one, if you have a construction-only loan, that's what you got, you cannot have an HVML, you can't have a high cost, you can't have any of that. So if you do construction only, what ends up happening is you can load up all the fees you want into the construction loan. And if you do that and load them all up there, who cares if your APR is 9? The customer probably won't even notice that it's that. And none of the rules care because it is a construction loan, not something else. And so you can load them up there. Now, doing that accomplishes several things. Number one, there are customers that wander off somewhere else to get the end financing because you insisted they follow the rules during construction and they're mad at you. Why not make sure you get your fees up front so you don't have to worry, you know, if they walk, they walk, you still made money. Number two, there's a rule called FASB 91, which is way beyond our scope here, but what it basically says is that you take the fees that you charge into income over time. And once the loan pays out, whatever fees are not already in income, you take into income. So if you do a separate loan that has a maturity and gets paid off, that means all that construction expense and all those fees, rather than being drug out, maybe in some of your banks at least, over the life of the loan, comes into income now, helping your income now, not over the next 20 or 30 years. The downside, of course, is you got to hold the customer in. But the reality is you set it up right. You charge them pretty much everything you need to charge on the construction loan. If they leave you, you walked away with some money. If they stay with you, you can do the permanent financing for almost nothing and do quite well and take that money into income ahead of time, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you decide what to do with that information. I'm just throwing it out there for whatever it may be worth. What the reg is talking about here on page 18 is this situation. If you're going to do one note and two disclosures, if that's how you're going to do it, most of you don't do that right now, but if you get to that point, when you do the two disclosures, they want you to be careful about how you allocate the costs between the construction disclosure and the permanent. You're not allowed to do one note and two disclosures and load up everything on the construction disclosure. If you want to load everything up, you got to do two separate loans. And that's what they're trying to tell you here on page 18. If you're not doing two separate loans, or even if you are, either way, if you're not doing one note, two disclosures, you really don't have to worry about that. And most of you probably are not. But it's pretty common sense and really being fair with the customer and not, you know, not lying, stuff like that, important things like that. Going on to page 19 now. The early disclosure section here on page 19 is pretty much for non-real estate or cooperative stuff like that, things you don't get involved at in reverse mortgages, whatnot. And so happy reading. We're not going to spend any time on that. We're going to move now into section 18, which is where we really get into the disclosures. What they've done here is, because it has been fairly ambiguous and not as well written as it might have been, in this first section under section 18, they tell you when you're going to use the old style disclosures. The old style disclosures means a Fed box, okay? And you can see the list there. Unsecured loans, personal property, not a dwelling, secured by personal property other than a cooperative that is a dwelling and not also secured by real property, and reverse mortgages. Okay? That's pretty much the loans we're doing now. And, you know, basically the old form. And it's really no change. It's language cleanup. So happy reading on that. Whoops. I believe I went too far. Let me back up here. It talks about payment schedule. In mortgage transactions, you might want to give that a read. There's not a whole lot there, but you might want to do that. Interest rate and payment summary for mortgage transactions. Again, those are the old style transactions that we tend to not do anymore. So I don't think there's a whole lot there, but they continue to write and write and write about them. Have a good time. Okay, moving on here now. Section 19 on page 22, this is where we really get into the disclosure world in detail. It talks about the creditor giving the early disclosure, and fine. No big deal there. Then variations, bottom of 22. And you notice all that I put in here is the reg, by the way. And the reason I did that is I tried to make sense of their commentary, and it was such a mess I gave up. So on the bottom of the page there, you'll see the regulatory text for variations for certain charges. No real changes, really. They're trying to clean it up. And one of the phrases that we need to really think about here, and you will see this through, if you read through all this text, you'll see this over and over and over again. And that's the phrase reasonably available. So, I'm going to come in, I want to buy a home. Are you going to know what my insurance bill is? Of course not. You're not going to know that. You're going to guess. And based on whatever is normal for your community, that's what you're going to do. And that's still okay. However, assuming I'm buying a single-family home that there's no issues with, you can get the tax information that is available. And so that makes it reasonably available. Now, if I'm buying 10 acres of ground to build a house on someday, you don't know what taxes are, and you can still guess for that. I don't know if you have this in your state, but in Ohio we have something called homestead exemption. It's for low-income senior citizen types. And what it does for them is gives them a tax break on their property taxes. And that's only good for as long as they own the property. When someone else owns it that no longer has the option of homestead, then they have to go back and pay, quote, a regular tax bill, unquote. And so we may or may not know what that tax bill will be in Ohio. If you have something similar, that could be a problem in your state as well. But the upshot of the whole thing here is that when you can get the taxes right, they want taxes right on the first LE because they believe it is reasonably available. And really, that's probably a good thing on the one hand, pain in the neck on the other, a little of both. But that's what they're after here. If you take a look at the bottom of page 23, last word on the page, first word on the top of 24, reasonably available. Reasonably available. So that goes on for a while, and you can read some more about that. Next thing that is part of that, it's on page 23, is expiration. This is your 10-day rule. They have 10 days to tell you they want to go forward and give you intent. And if they don't, then you're allowed to redo the loan, loan estimate, start over. The reality is it doesn't come into play that often, but once in a while it will. They are explicitly now putting in the reg that allows you to go longer than 10 days. Remember that 10 days does not include weekends. So that's really 14 days. A number of our client banks here in the Midwest are just going 16 calendar days. And the thought process is this. They need to go 14. Christmas and New Year's are a week apart. So it is possible that you could have two legal holidays in there. If you just do 16 days across the board and let it go at that, you will always be in compliance, always and forever. And that makes sense to me. If that works for you, great. You do what you want. Now, when you do 16 days and there is no legal holidays, technically you've given them two more days than you're required to do by law. And the reg now says that if you want to give them more time, go right ahead. You can't give them less. You can't give them more. Also on there, delayed settlement on a construction loan. And this happens. We get calls about this a lot. You know, they're all ready to move to permanent financing. They've given the LE, and something blows up. We had one a few weeks ago, a banker told me, They were all ready to finish and go into the permit financing. Everything's great. Everything's cooking right along, no problem. And then, at the last minute, they fail an inspection because a plug blows in the wall. And so now they've got to go back and open up walls and do all sorts of ugly things to get the occupancy certificate. And, you know, everyone's in a big tizzy about that, which we can understand. But what that means is that it isn't going to close anytime soon. And because of that, fees may change. And the rule allows you to adjust for that. And there's more language about that for you there to go ahead and take a look at. Notice as you go into the commentary, once again, as I told you earlier, you see the phrase reasonably available. And you're going to see that throughout. If you read this whole thing, that's what you're going to see over and over again. Moving on to the next subject, provision of disclosures. There are some requirements here. That's on the bottom of 23 going on to 24. It talks a lot about cooperatives, no issue for you. Multiple advanced construction loans, how you want to do that. They give you many examples beyond the scope of what we're going to do here today, but you might want to take a look at the examples. Make sure you understand them there on the bottom of 24 going on to page 25. It gives you some examples to explain exactly what the timing issues might be there. Now, page 25 towards the bottom. Customers sometimes are permitted to shop. Not every bank allows shopping, but if you're one of them, there's certain things you have to do. What you have to do is tell them that you're allowed to shop by putting whatever the thing is in section C on the LE, saying things you can shop for, and you also give them a shopping, a list of your providers, a shopping list of your providers. They can use your providers or not as they see fit. They are allowed to shop after all. So at any rate, a couple things that. Number one, a question we get all the time. On the federal form for your list of providers, there's a column for cost. That is optional, does not need completed, and if I were running your bank, you wouldn't do it. Do everything on the LE and let it go at that, okay? Save yourself some difficulties there. But they want to make sure that the customers are getting information about this subject. So they talk about permission to shop, which is pretty straightforward. And you have to be very clear about disclosure of the services for which they can shop. Remember, you have to match up what the service is but on your provider list with what it says on the LE. They got to match up so the customer can follow. Don't get crazy with it. That written list of providers is really useful, and you have to identify them, and they got a little more specific. If you read through that, you'll see that it got really clear about making sure that your customer can call that provider and or other, go there to their place of business or whatever to talk to them about anything they want to talk to them about. So they want that information to be clear. Good faith determination for estimates of closing costs. General rule is pretty straightforward there. There are certain things that you cannot change. Fees that are coming to you or a broker, fees paid to an affiliate of you or the broker, or fees paid to an unaffiliated third party if the creditor did not allow the customer to shop. And so I'm going to be careful here because pretty much on everyone's list, they're not allowed to shop appraiser. And we've had some awful things happen. Here's one example. More urban kind of environment. And what happened, we got the phone call, said, hey, we quoted our normal $400 for the appraisal. It turned out to be a McMansion and had some extra stuff and blah, 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 blah. You don't care about any of that. except the appraisal came in at $900. What do we do now? Can we charge them the other $500? And we talked about a minute, and then I asked this question. What's the loan amount? $900,000. Okay, you're in a development. The loan amount is $900,000. That might have given you a hint that this might be a different property from other properties, and you didn't react to that. So I'd say you're out the $500 because I don't see that as a changed circumstance. Now, if that happened and they were only borrowing like $50,000, yeah, you might want to make an argument there. But if they're borrowing a huge amount of money, someone should have thought, gee, what about? And so be careful with that. The five categories of things that cannot change there are on page 26. Again, nothing new, just making it a little bit more clear. There are certain things that have limited increases available, and they go on to page 27, and recording fees, and fees for a non-affiliated party that your customer uses and they're on your provider list. That's the categories there that have limited increase available. Remember, the 10% cut is based on the aggregate, not each individual item by itself. And so they talk about that at some length on page 27. Again, no news, cleanup, and trying to make it more clear. And then the things for which you can guess, frankly. The way you guess is by telling what your provider would charge. But let me give you some things to think about here, okay? Let's assume for whatever reason you have a customer of your bank that decides they want to buy a home in Florida. Well, maybe not this week. This would be a bad week. But let's assume at some point they want to go to Florida for the winter. Well, that's fine. They want you to finance it because you're the bank. What are the charges in Florida? Probably very different. It can be a lot of different things. I was talking to a banker in Illinois, and their customer, quote, got a deal, unquote, on a house from FHA, VA, foreclosed on kind of property. And they're in southwest Illinois, really pretty rural. And the closing cost to close the loan there would be right around $800. This loan had to close in Chicago because the seller was HUD or FHA or somebody, and the $800 turned into $8,000. Now, the bank wasn't out the money because, they put down local providers and let it go at that, but they certainly did not do a service to their customer by hitting with them with that at the last minute. If you tell me you got to bring $15,000 to closing, and then you call me up and say, oh, you know what, we recalculated, it's only 13, I'm thrilled to death. If you tell me 15 and that turns into 23, I'm ticked off. So you want to be careful with this. But let's assume the property in Florida, just for the sake of argument here. I don't know what filing fees are in your state, but in Florida, to file a mortgage could cost you a couple grand. Filing fees are part of your 10% tolerance area, which means if you don't check that out and you did that loan, most of the filing fees are going to come out of your pocket. So you need to do some work here. What's an appraisal out of your market? Well, you don't really know what that is. You're going to have to call and get that number from someone. Other title work might be very different. It depends. We don't really know. But the idea is you don't, for the things where they're going to use a provider that you're not picking, they're on their own for whatever the charges are. But do you want to tell them the bad news now or wait till the end? I'd rather tell them now myself. That's the way I do it. And I think it makes sense and is the best way to handle the customer situation. That's the reality there. At any rate, you notice on page 28, they go further with good faith requirements for things like property taxes and non-required services chosen by the consumer. and they want to make sure all of them are bona fide, that's really not a problem for most everyone. But you want to be careful with that, of course. Moving on to page 29. Revised estimates. So if you have to do a revised estimate, remember that you can give them a new estimate, loan estimate, as long as you only change the things that were affected by the changed circumstance. And they go on about that for a while. And you notice there, number 5 on page 29, best information reasonably available. I think I've said that a few times already. Remember, if it's an interest rate dependent charge, that can float along with the interest rate until you lock. And they're not doing anything different there. They're giving you some more examples of that kind of information to follow. Now, you've issued the CD and the loan blows up for whatever reason. One of my favorite stories was something that actually happened to me a long time ago. Back when appraisers had to go get the pictures developed at the drugstore or whatever, and then had to stick them on the paper. Old technology. And the appraiser walked in my office, dropped the appraisal on my desk, and said, "Look at the pictures." And so it looked like a nice little ranch house on a few acres of ground in the middle of nowhere kind of thing. A nice place, you know. Wouldn't mind being there. And I flipped through the pictures, and I realized there's a trailer hitch hanging out of the side of the house. Someone built a house around a mobile home. Well, suddenly it could not go Freddie or Fannie, any of those places. It had to be done some other way. And so if back then we didn't have to deal with it, but if it were happened now like that and your closing disclosure was out, yes, you can go back, turn that into an in-house loan on the CD itself. That makes it tougher to do that way. Sometimes you might be better off starting over, but those things are possible, and they make that clear to you on page 30. There's more regulatory information there to talk about, and so on. They get into the whole thing about. Excuse me, I have to cough. Sorry about that. They get into the whole thing about the 10-day rule and the longer time period. Happy reading on that. We won't go back over that. Provision of final disclosures, and we move now to page 31. No real news here, but there is one thing as you read through here that will be useful to you. As we mentioned on the initial list, one of the things they did was give you a tolerance for total payments. The reason they did that is because if you read through here, you will see that if the only thing that would cause you to reissue a CD is a change in odd days interest, if that is the only thing that is changing, then you don't have to send a new CD. You can just let it go, which means, of course, your total payments is also going to be off. And they give you wiggle room on that now, and that's a good thing as far as I'm concerned, because a lot of CDs are being issued for 47 cents difference, you know? Ridiculous. So at any rate, they've put that in there. That's per diem interest on page 32. Refunds related to good faith estimates, our analysis, there's really not a whole lot there new to talk about. Average charge is on page 33. If you're smart, you'll never do that. And then transactions involving a seller. Don't really have a slide for this, but we want to talk about it just for a minute here. One of the things that is happening in Ohio, where I live, is that in the contract that the buyer and seller are signing, they're also signing that the realtor gets a full copy of the CD. Quite frankly, it's none of their business as far as I'm concerned. But you know what? You didn't negotiate a contract. At all, the customer already has made that decision by signing their name. If that would happen, I would say to the customer, by the way, did you know that this is in your contract? And if you want to fight with them, you go ahead. If you don't want to give it to them, it's okay with me too, but you might want to take a look at that. And what they talk about here on page 33 and 4 is what happens if you're doing a simultaneous second as part of the deal. What you can do is get all of your seller-related items on the first mortgage CD, and you give them that, and then they don't have to get into anything on the second mortgage CD, and they're saying that's okay. So by all means, take a look at that if you're doing that kind of business. Okay, on page 35, special information booklet. No one really reads it anyhow. They've cleaned up the text. They've done nothing else with it. No news there. Time to move on. Rescission. They cleaned up the tolerance language a little bit. They didn't change a thing. That starts on the bottom of page 35. Consumes page 36 and part of page 37. No real news. Just language cleanup is all they're doing there. So we'll go ahead and move on. They got really nuts with this, quite frankly, because after you read through all this, you realize that they really have messed with us a lot. And they actually went to the trouble to change some headings. You'll see that on page 38. We don't care about that. But full disclosure, I'm showing you everything that's there. Now, we move into page 39. We're in now the actual LE itself. Sale price. For some reason, it seems to be a big deal. I don't know what their issue is, but remember, here's how sale price works. If there is a sale and they're buying the real estate, it's simple. What happens if they're a sale and they're buying the real estate and a motorhome? The TRID documents are all about real estate. They could care less about the motorhome. And so the rule says if you have a separate price for each, you do the motorhome some other way on other documents, and you leave it out of this. If they're combined and there's just one number for everything, then, you have to do it. So be careful with that. There's a couple pages about that. Loan term start date, I have no idea why they thought that was important, but you can read about that if you care. Purpose. A purpose is still a mess, and people still struggle with it. The reality is, let me give you some examples here. Customer is buying a house, purchase, no problem there. Customer is buying land to build a house someday, still a purchase. The customer owes 10 grand on the land and wants to refi that into the construction loan for the permanent financing to get the house built. In that situation, that is a refinance because you're refinancing mortgage. It is a waterfall, remember. And so purchases first, you have a refinance. The only way you can ever mark construction as your purpose is if they loan the if they own the land free and clear, then you could be in a situation where you have a construction. Short of that, you'll never use that one at all. And then if it doesn't fit in the first three, it's a home equity loan. So you can take a look at that. They're trying to make it a little more clean. Same thing with product. They try to explain that more on page 41. Good luck with that. We hope you don't really need that. Rate lock information. And this is really kind of useful, I think, a little bit here. Excuse me. Yeah, if you read that, it's on page 42. The current rule is that if you tell them 10 days that are going to end on September 15th, that date sits out there forever and ever and ever and ever, even after you're past September 15th. What they've done is they've changed this now so that once you have intent to proceed, that date, time, and time zone for intent to proceed disappears off the form. They don't need that information anymore, and it always looks stupid anyhow, so that strikes me as a really good idea. They actually had to redo the language for the loan amount and loan terms. That's on page 42. Happy reading with that. We're not going to get too worked up about that. On page 43, they have things that I would hope would never happen. Interest rate at consummation is not known. I don't think any of you probably do that to your customers. Here, sign here. We'll tell you what your rate is later. I don't think that's the way we do business, but apparently someone does. They've got it. They have it in the rule. Happy reading on that. And, of course, you may not know what your initial periodic payment is on the CD, but you would later. And it's a lot of language cleanup there, really not a lot of excitement for anything for what we're doing right now. So we're going to move on to page 44. New language about assessed value for construction loans, not really a big deal. They want you to get taxes as close as possible. We already had that conversation, time to move on. It goes on about construction loans at some length. No real news there beyond what we've already talked about, but happy reading about that. Amounts paid by the creditor using escrow account funds. Most of you don't do that kind of stuff. That's on the bottom, page 45. Generally, you don't pay certain things out of escrow, but happy reading on that. The optional alternative table, that is a short form LE. There's a little conversation about that. You'll find that on page 46. Not a lot of excitement there, but it is there. Inspection and handling fees. We want to be very, very careful with this. What they do is they give you some room here in this portion of the reg that they don't give you other places. This is on page 47. So let's talk about this for a minute. Inspections, are, you know, sending the appraiser out to make sure the house is being built, all that fun stuff. All those things happen post-closing. Because it is a service that is earned post-closing, it is finance charge. So what happens if you tell the customer 6 disbursements and that turns into 8 or 4 turns into 6 or whatever? I advise most banks when that happens, you just have to eat it and be done with it. The fact that you didn't get all your money, sorry about that, but there's really not a lot to be done about it. They basically say here that when you do your initial LE, you put on there your best guess. Well, that's fine and dandy until you get to the end where you really run into a problem with the issue of undisclosed finance charge. A really horrible idea. So they give you some room there, and then they take it away on the finance charge part of the reg. So if you want to take a look at that, go ahead. Don't spend a lot of time on it. You can do an addendum. You notice there for post-consummation inspection and handling fees, but you still have the issue of finance charge, which might make all that a moot point. Lender credits. It's very clear. Once you give a credit, you may not take it back, period, the end. Done. So be very careful with that, okay? Quick comment on page 48 about that. Lots of technical changes on under 37.7 here, starting on page 48. Your programmer really cares. You probably don't. Not much, anyhow. And that goes on for a while. So, get your fingers loosened up and get yourself over to page 54. That's our next stop. Contact information. And this is, you know, who do they contact if they have questions? And you want to make sure you have this right. No great big deal here, I don't think. Right address, right phone numbers, that kind of stuff. Not a big deal, but they cleaned up some language in the commentary there as well. On page 54 and following, have a good time with that. On page 55, total of payments in the first 5 years and the tip. Again, stuff for your programmer more than you, but they give some more detail there. And happy reading on that. Rounding starts on the bottom, page 55. Your programmer needs to know that you don't really care very much. Reduction in principal balance is our next section, and you'll see that in the next couple pages. Again, it's for your review, no big deal. Okay, now, I'm sorry, that's on 58, not 57, I'm sorry. At any rate, time to move on, and we have some principal reduction again on 58. At 59, we're in the closing disclosure now. Talk about the disbursement date, and they're saying it's the date you disperse the money. Surprise, surprise, surprise. They have some language there about that. Happy reading on that point. A simultaneous financing is talked about on page 60, and sale price when there is no seller and so forth are on the next couple pages. There's not a lot of meat here, friends, and we're not going to waste your time going through it, but it is there. If you want to take a look at it, feel free to do so. Goes on for a while. The alternative table, again, the short form, is talked about on page 61. And it's really more for your programmers than it is for you, but if you want to read it, feel free. Construction loan inspections and handling fees make an appearance also on the CD. You can read about that. It's not, again, not a big deal, not much of an issue for you, but you might want to take a little bit of time to look at that. That is 38.5, and that is on starts on page 65. Again, try and avoid any extra fees above and beyond what you told them initially, so you don't have to worry about that. Taxes and other government fees are on page 66. And once again, they want those right on that first LE. And Lord knows they want it right on the CD, if you can possibly manage it. Same thing with recording fees. Remember, recording fees are part of your 10%. You want to make sure you have those right going in. And if you don't have any prepaid interest, they say you put a zero in for that. That's for your programmer to do. That's not something you have any control over. So don't get too shook up about that. Moving on here to 38.7, another warning about lender credits. You'll see that in middle of page 67. Happy reading there. 38.8, which starts on the bottom of page 67, is for your programmer. It will help them a lot to do a better job for you because they actually have something to use now as a decent guide about what to actually do because they had to guess the first time. So your programmers will be happy to see this only because they can quit guessing so much. If you want to read through all that, you have a great time. We're not going to get too worked up about it. We're going to move on now to page 75. Description and amounts. Cleanup language here again, not really any news for you. Make sure that whatever you call it on your provider list is the same thing you call it on the LE and the CD so they can follow the language and what the charge is all the way through beginning to end. And they talk about that in the 75 and 76, especially in the borrower's side, obviously. There's more commentary. This goes on for a while, talking about identical amounts, making sure you have things right, the contract sale price and personal property. Remember, personal property only ends up as having an impact on these documents if you cannot separate them out, which mostly you can. But you could have a situation where you can't, and they talk about that. It's kind of a rerun about what we talked about earlier. Contractual adjustments, things you're allowed to do because of the contract between the parties, and they give you more information about that. That's more, again, for your programmer than it is for you. Other consumer charges. If you didn't disclose them up front, remember you got a tough time disclosing them on the CD. So make sure you get them right there. And then they have a section about subordinate financing CDs, gift funds, and the like. And you might want to read through that because gift funds can be a major problem here. They do give you some example help and some things that will be useful for you in this couple of pages. POC, paid outside of closing. Remember, that still is available on the CD. Not used very often at all, but once in a while it might occur. And so they've had that in the original rule. They're trying to make it a little more clear with some more commentary about that. And you will see that on page 78. If you have no seller or subordinate lien financing transactions, there's really not much of a problem there. You don't have to worry about it. When you do have a seller, they have to get their side. Remember, everything has to be right. And just a quick couple of comments. They don't really talk about it here, but remember, the whole CD is your responsibility, not the title company's. And so if you get into a spat with them, you have to make sure you win, okay? That's the way it goes. Make sure you win because ultimately you're the one on the hook for that. And some more about itemization. Frankly, a lot of this also is going to make a lot more difference to your programmer than it is to you. There's a long section about escrow here. There's really not much meat in it. Section 3811, which starts on page 81. Not a lot here. Once again, they want you to be careful to try and get everything right up front as best you can. Remember, now we're on the CD, so you really have to have it right. And it's a lot of cleanup language there, not a lot of meat, but it is there. We wanted to point that out. Total payments. You notice here you can be understated by no more than $100 or greater than the amount. And really, they put this in there to make sure they had some limits in place. But this is for your odd day's interest. You expect it to close Wednesday, you close Thursday, it changes odd day's interest. In that case, it's going to go down. So what you have quoted to them is greater than the amount required to be disclosed. The amount you're going to charge them goes down, so you're good. We want to make sure that you're in the ballpark, though, and so they say understated by $100 or over by any amount. Either side is right, but if you have one day's worth of interest, unless it's a really big loan, these days it would have to be a gargantuan loan for it to be more than $100 for one day's interest. And what that does is that saves you from screwing around and going back to fix up a CD really for not much of anything. Loan calculation, there's some examples there. That's on page 83. And total of payments, some examples there. Again, much more for your programmers than it is for you. Section 13, which starts on page 84, is all for your programmers. You don't really care about any of it. We're not going to waste your time right now going through it. It covers the next couple of pages. They have some things here you don't care about, and really not a big problem at all. It goes on for a while, and really not a lot of meat for you there, and so I'm not going to waste a lot of time talking about it. The last thing that I want to mention there is on page 88. And you will notice at the top of 88, you'll see the five little asterisks there. Whenever they use the five, they're telling you something is being left out completely. Whole sections are being left out. And so you notice this is Appendix D, but we're actually talking about number 7 in that appendix. And this is something that I'm not going to spend a lot of time on, but you've got to read. Okay, this goes back into construction loans and all that nightmare that construction loans are. We talked about a lot earlier. And the reality here is they're trying to give you more information about how they want it done, how you handle the loan term, how you handle product, because products could be different depending on exactly whether it's a separate construction loan or combined construction perm or something like that. They also talk about interest rate, talk about any increase in the periodic payment. And one thing that has come up a lot, we get questions, why did the machine do this? I want to talk about it. We're talking about the payment schedule on the LE or CD, either one. The reality is if you're doing a construction perm, and your construction period is less than a year, let's say it's 9 months. What's going to happen in the 9 months is they're going to be paying interest only. And before you get to the end of that first year, they're going to be making regular monthly payments. So what your machine will do on a construction perm is they will make it look kind of like an ARM loan because they'll give you the amount for interest only and the amount of the first payment. Because both those are going to happen within the first year. So it looks like an ARM loan, but it is not. It is really being honest because they're going to be interest only for a while, and then regular payments are going to begin, and that's all going to be happening during that first year. So it kind of makes sense to do that, but it does tend to screw up the customers a little bit, so you have to make sure you can explain that away and make good sense of it for them. Because it gets very confusing. Also, another question we get all the time is, should we be using a half a month's interest for the interest-only period for construction or a whole month's interest? Which should we use? And my comment to you is, you do what you feel like. If I were making the decision, if I'm doing a regular construction loan where you're starting with bare ground, and so there's not a lot of money going out the door up front, using half a month's worth of interest as your interest payment amount, which is legal under Appendix D, makes perfectly good sense because some months are going to be less than that amount, some months are going to be more than that amount. And so that works just fine. If you have a loan where maybe you're doing it as a construction, but 60% of the money is going out the door the very first day, then using the higher amount, a whole month's worth of interest as your monthly payment for the construction period, makes sense to me. And I think it can change from loan to loan. Both are okay under Reg D. You can do or Appendix D, rather. You can do it either way, whatever makes you happy. Most of the money's going out the door up front, but is a construction, you can still use half a month's interest. But then you're lying to the customer, and I don't think that's a great idea. But you make the decision there based on what you wanted to see and want it to look like, and make sure that you're not doing something silly to mess up your customer, or frankly, to out and out lie to them. That is a bad idea. Now, I know that was really superficial and high, because that's all the time we had to do in this. In the live sessions, it runs about an hour and 20 minutes and with a break in there, so we're about in the same time period. At any rate, I hope you go back and take a look at it. There's a lot of stuff there. It is a mess. Again, I tried to use their document to try and explain these things. And the more I did, the worse it got, and I finally gave up and just said, I'm going to put the text in there. And remember, this stuff is final next October, and in your first section next year, we're going to talk about all trade, including these issues, for about 4 hours, 4 or 5 hours. So there'll be plenty of time to talk about it, and plenty of time to prepare. And there's nothing really much there that is a big, hairy deal, frankly. So, at any rate, I hope we've helped you. If you need me after we're done, 800-525-9775 will get you to our office, and I will be here for the rest of the afternoon. Give me a few minutes to get back downstairs so I can answer that phone if it rings. But I'll be happy to talk to you about anything that I might have confused you on. Take care of yourself, and we hope to see you all very, very soon at a live session. Take care of yourselves, and have a great day. Thanks for attending. You can go ahead and disconnect now.